just to up here.
You
don't want to
pick the scenic route,
didn't you? That's how we, like, spoke for much harder. It was like paint. I can't even tell what it is.
Last time, when you guys bled out here, they washed it into the
table. Yes.
They always move it every day. Now we have
Linking lighter.
Cycles of 100 per second.
180.
I'm from the wetland group. I know it's very late in the semester, but while, you know, everyone's here,
so we gotta get
if you can make an announcement about, like, the importance of security in the lab, like, locking the doors
right.
when they leave.
Right, okay.
Because, you know, this is right before our turf crew's presentation. They're
right.
going to come in and take a picture. It's just like, you know, it's a disappointment because it wasn't even ours. Like, it was Dr. Ryan's.
Right.
And he's going to be more careful next semester. Is like giving stuff to students now because
right.
it might be stolen. So that really puts us in a bad spot.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That's a good point.
That pretzel's drenched in oil.
I know, she just
did you order oil for that pretzel?
I didn't, she just gave it to me.
All right, let's go ahead and get started. We'll probably have another quiz in a few minutes, so. So, first of all, an important announcement. We had a laboratory door left open in Anderson 104, and a very expensive piece of equipment walked out the door. A critical piece of equipment for one of our teams. So, over the next week or so, since I know everyone's in the lab building stuff and there's going to be a lot of people coming and going at odd hours, please make sure you leave doors locked. And please make sure you secure anything that's really valuable, because we don't need more things walking off these days. And with Anderson in particular, you've got to keep that door locked, because there's a lot of foot traffic there from outside the College of Engineering. And that's probably why we had this piece of equipment walk away. So don't leave, exercise proper amounts of caution. Are there any administrative issues? We're getting pretty close to final presentations. So hopefully you will be meeting with your advisors over the next week and going through your presentations. Do not show up on the 12th with a presentation that your advisor hasn't seen. That will undoubtedly lower your grade. Yes?
When do we talk about what the major points we need to hit for final presentation?
Do we have to talk about that at this point?
Yeah.
Yep. What should the major points of the final presentation be?
Why we need some more?
Some of the teams have learned the hard way why we go through three engineering prototypes. We've had a lot of stuff burned up, particularly in our on the seventh floor, apparently, over the last couple weeks. So that's been kind of interesting. So what? You tell me what points you have to drive home on this final presentation as you approach graduation day and ask me for your diploma.
The product is unrealistic. Here's why.
No. Now, seriously, what? I mean, we've been working now since the very first day I walked into seminar class, which is seems like ages ago, right?
Some people seems like yesterday.
For some people, it'll seem like tomorrow, right? seem like next semester. So, what do you have to drive home on this presentation? You are very close to being full professional employed engineers, and your boss is going to come to you and ask you to make these kinds of presentations very soon. Sooner than you think. And believe me, if you get up there and give them some dribble, they're going to say, well, we're never going to hire another engineer from Temple again. So, what do you have to do on this presentation? You have worked with me for a long time, so you should have a very good idea of what my and what others' expectations are.
Show and prove the test results.
Close.
Talk about how the testing results correspond to the design specifications. If you were able to meet them.
Why? So let's start with major points. What's the major point you're driving home, highest level point? That your project works? No. We've talked about that.
The design.
What is the mantra of senior design?
It never works.
What's our phrase? Evidence of design. Thank you. Why has it been hard to show that in the past? In the past three presentations. I had a really good presentation made up for today, too, but I guess we're not going to get to all of it.
Let's look at that.
No. Because you were missing pieces, right? The first presentation, you really didn't know what you were doing. Approach was weak. Second presentation, it was still all on paper. Third presentation, you didn't quite have hardware yet. Fourth presentation, you have everything now, theoretically. So how are you going to go about showing evidence of design? You guys have hit pieces of that, but let's put it all together in a big picture. Walk me through your presentation.
If our approach was fairly realistic in getting the final result.
You're going to give me motivation.
Okay.
Short, right? You're going to give me design constraints. Short. You're going to give me approach. Short. Maybe even just your block diagram for a large part of your approach. That's all three. Those are the first three presentations, right?
Yeah.
Now what?
Tests. Test results.
You're going to give me tests. Tests on prototype number one. Okay, at that point, you're about half of the way there, which means 50%. No, at that point, that's not bad. But what next? What's next is key, so write this down. Listen to the recording, folks. It's on the recording. The next piece is what's key.
Less learned.
No. If you walk with lessons learned, your Q&A is going to be hell. There's quite a few things missing from this point. Motivation, design constraints, approach, test number one, test. What happens after test number one if your design constraints were set properly?
They were too low.
No, I don't think anyone's design constraints are too low at this point. Too easy to meet. What happens if your design constraints were set really, you know, realistically or aggressively? Aggressively is maybe another better word.
Never reached them, maybe got one, maybe
Maybe you got one of them. The rest of them, you know, you missed quite a number of them, right? You hide that in this presentation? No. In this presentation, that's good, assuming what follows happens. So what happens after that? So you tell us your test results. Here's what we met. Here's what we didn't meet. Then what happens?
I adjusted the design.
How you redesigned your system to meet those design constraints. How you analyzed the results of the test and figured out what was wrong with your project. If you say, we went into the lab and we dorked around for 3 hours and we got it to work, you don't get any points. In fact, I may take away points. If you say, we analyzed these measurements, we did some computations, we did some engineering analysis, you throw a few equations around and you say, here's our new design, that's good. Then what happens? Then you test number two. Hopefully, design constraints are looking pretty good. Now what happens? If you want to get a really, really good grade on this presentation. Okay, so now maybe you're in the C, B range. Where's my own team isn't here? Where's the tube amplifier team?
I will tell you, but I will be stitching on
that. All right, I'll make a note of that. My own team missed. What happens next? You built a prototype. You adjusted it. What next?
Product design.
Now you're actually, hopefully there's a third iteration where you actually productize it or harden it or really try to shrink it, try to make it really a finished product. In the case of electronics projects, that means printed circuit boards. In the case of mechanical engineering projects, that means you may actually go and mill some parts on machine, milling machines and things like that. In the case of civil, I'd have to think about that. Then you do your final testing. Now, what happens when you do, if that's the first time you've actually tried to shrink wrap this thing, what's going to happen between test two and test three? More than likely.
Board will burn.
More than likely, your first attempt at number three is going to fail. You will probably lose some ground on your design constraints again. Because when you try to shrink wrap things, all sorts of new problems arise. But that's okay, as long as there's analysis and explanations of these things. And then hopefully, you know, you wrap up by saying, well, here's our final sort of proposed design. Now that we actually understand everything we ever wanted to about this project, this is how it should have been built. These are the things we should have done differently. If you do all that, you'll be fine on final presentation day. Realistically, you know, a large number of teams aren't going to get that far because I've seen the state of a lot of the hardware. But that's the goal. That's the design cycle that we've been preaching for 2.5 semesters. Okay, so any questions on that? Is that clear? Okay, so sort of along these lines, let me talk a little bit today about accelerated life testing. A number of you have design constraints that say something like our system will be low maintenance, or our system will have a expected lifetime of 3 years. Our system's designed to go a long time between failures. Suppose you're building a good example these days. I used to work at a company that made household appliances when I was an intern. Suppose you're building something like refrigerators or washing machines. What's your expected lifetime?
10 years?
Very long.
Pretty long these days. One of the single biggest changes in the automotive industry has been the increased reliability of cars. Cars used to last 60,000 miles or less. Cars used to last 3 years. Today, cars last 200,000 miles. A good, you know, most reasonable cars. Was there a...
When you say for appliances, it depends on the, what kind of, if you're trying to sell it as a commercial appliance or just a home appliance, you're going to have a different reliability factor at the price.
That's actually a good point. Very good point. So let's stick to consumer. Refrigerators have always amazed me. They tend to last a pretty long time, and they run 24 hours a day. Washing machines and dryers and these kinds of things actually last quite a long time, though I believe a lot of washing machines are probably designed for about a 7 to 10-year lifespan, but they'll actually last longer than that. So let's say, for example, you're building a refrigerator and your lifespan is 20 years. How do you as a design engineer actually test that?
That's a harder one because it runs 24/7.
Yeah, it's a hard one. Okay, so you want me to talk about washing machines then?
Washing machines are a little easier.
Okay, let's talk about...
And see what happens.
Continuous cycle, till it breaks. Hard.
All right, we'll work up to refrigerators. Let's talk about washing machines. So this washing machine is going to last 10 years. Are you going to build it, put it in a lab, and let it run under normal operating conditions for 10 years and then decide, okay, it's ready to sell as a product?
No.
No, why?
Can't wait 10 years.
You can't wait 10 years to turn a profit on this sucker, right? All right. You've all been to ethics training. At the other extreme, are you going to say, well, just tell them it really lasts 10 years and we'll hope nobody brings it back for repairs? How do you think companies set warranty policies?
Testing them out.
Statistical models.
By pushing the test.
They find the expected life of the item and then set it, set the warranty like a year before that.
There's a very companies that are really good at this do that. They actually do kind of a risk analysis. They do statistical modeling. Do they actually design the product often to have that kind of a lifetime?
Absolutely.
Somewhat. When you as the engineer walk in and say, you know, I'm going to use titanium plated leads because I want this thing to last 50 years.
And you're done.
Yeah, they're going to say the exit's that way. They're going to say we just build them until they break and let them break. And thank God that's after a month after our warranty period. Not quite, but there's a delicate balance there. Okay, so we have a problem that we're going to have to, you as engineers are going to have to sign on the dotted line that says the expected lifetime of this product is a certain duration. You will be responsible for this. And yet you'll never actually have run that test. And, you know, we see this all the time in things like automobiles. You know, you build an automobile and 4 years later there's a massive recall. Fortunately, you've been promoted by then, so it's no longer your problem. So let's look at a couple fun things.
Environmental conditions, find out what the weaknesses are, so that we can design stronger, better products. Motorola test subject, take one.
Commencing usage test.
Hello. 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 Hello.
That was the shock test. Let me show you one other short video that's also related. Well, so thank you. That's actually a good lead into this, the rest of this talk. So that's all cool. Lots of money spent on pretty sophisticated test equipment. Why? And why did Motorola, for example, put these things out on YouTube?
They tell people that they're testing their products, not just snake oil.
Quality. Who said quality? Why? Well, why did Motorola? They're one of the few that's put these kinds of videos out on YouTube. Why?
It seems like when I was in the military, Motorola tried to shoot for a certain audience.
Exactly. Motorola, based on their heritage of building equipment for the military, has always positioned themselves as a high-quality manufacturer. Even in the cell phone space, for many years, they've built cell phones, which are pretty durable. And many of you I know have had the unfortunate fate of dropping your cell phone, your rather cheaply made cell phone, and watching it crack into a million pieces. Quality is something they try to differentiate themselves on. In fact, Motorola for many years has been one of the leading manufacturers in terms of quality. They've won many quality awards and that kind of thing. Now, they've obviously, as you watch these videos, pretty sophisticated. In fact, my first internship was at a site that used to be Motorola. It had actually been bought out by Panasonic. But I was in a lab for my first job as I think I was a junior and undergraduate. I got to do a summer internship in a life testing lab. And we did all this kind of stuff on televisions. We had temperature labs. We had ovens, all that stuff. We didn't have so much of the button pushing stuff. So you can spend all this money on this equipment, but what's the problem? Where's the sort of the scientific disconnect?
Not exactly
true. So your problem is we're going to have to do accelerated life testing. That's a lot more difficult than you might think. Why?
We don't want to break our project.
No, well, I mean not. If you're building something like a cell phone and you're trying to design it to, you know, be durable, be high quality, what does that mean in terms of sort of the financial impact on your business?
How close is the testing yourself? What's the product really be subjected to?
Exactly. And why is that hard when you're doing an accelerated life test? Exactly. So you're going to have to project, so have some way to project the results of this very accelerated test to actual use. Because if your accelerated test is not a good match for your actual use, you're basically wasting your money on the accelerated tests. So people look at these videos and they say, oh, you know, dropping a ball bearing on the display screen, that's rather obvious. I could have figured that out. But the question is, how does that relate to average use? And that's particularly an issue when you talk about subjecting to really cold temperatures or subjecting to really warm temperatures. When you talk about electronics, for example, what's one of the major failure modes? What's really damaging to electronics? No.
Humidity.
And what's really damaging about humidity? What's even worse than moisture? Constant humidity is actually not the worst of things. Constant temperature is actually not the worst of things. You can put a cell phone in, you know, I don't know, 180 below zero, it'll actually be okay. What really kills electronics? Cycling,
yeah.
Right? It's the cycling of humidity. It's the cycling of temperature. Why? Well, because the circuit board is actually expanding and contracting through that process, and eventually your solder joints start breaking. And this is true also of most mechanical systems. It's the cycling of temperature. I mean, why is it I was walking to work today thinking about this talk, and I'm walking down my street, and I'm looking at cracks in the asphalt, and as I usually do, I ask questions, why did it crack there versus over there? But what causes cracks in roads? It's not constant temperature. It's the cycling of temperature and the moisture. When expansion, moisture seeps in, then it freezes, and it pressures and forms cracks and all this kind of stuff. So fortunately, there's a whole science behind this, and we're certainly not going to go through that today because you could go through a whole semester course on this. But I wanted to just touch on a couple basic issues about accelerated life testing. The answer to all of this is always statistics. Some of the most sophisticated statistics are applied to this science of accelerated life testing so that we can conduct these short tests and predict what the implications of that are on actual use. So traditional life data analysis involves analyzing times to failures of a product, a system, or component obtained under normal operating conditions in order to quantify the life characteristics of the product, system, or component. In many situations and for many reasons, such life data or time to failure data, or it's often called mean time between failure, is very difficult, if not impossible, to obtain. You never really get to test your product over its actual lifetime. And usually, if you were to do that, what you would learn would be useless because the product has evolved so much. Now, in some fields, you do, and certainly you will accumulate experience in how your technology ages. The automotive industry is one industry where they've done a good job of this over the years. But most of the time when you're designing, you're kind of flying blind. So accelerated life testing involves acceleration of failures with the single purpose of quantification of the life characteristics of the product at normal use conditions. More specifically, accelerated life testing can be divided into two areas, qualitative and quantitative. Qualitative life testing. Qualitative tests are tests that yield information or failure modes only, yield failure information. A qualitative test will be, you throw the cell phone against the wall, if it survives, you say, well, you know, it worked. If it fails, you've got a failure. But they're not really good at predicting the lifetime of the product. These tests go by various names, torture tests, shake and bake. This highly accelerated life test, HALT, seems to be popular these days. Qualitative tests are performed on small samples with the specimen subjected to a single severe level of stress, like an impact test. Or you can do a number of stresses, like a robot that pushes a button repeatedly, or to a time-varying stress. Qualitative tests are used primarily to reveal probable failure modes. I used to work in a lab where we would zap televisions with high voltage. We'd actually hit them with 100,000 volt arcs, and we'd focus that right on the control panel. And then we would take the TV set apart, and we would analyze where it failed, and then try to improve the circuit design so that this wouldn't happen again. And the reason we ran this test was because with a television set, especially in kind of the old days, you would walk along your carpet, and then you touch the TV set, and you'd create a static electric shock, and those shocks could actually be pretty high voltages. So we did a lot of that kind of testing to determine what the primary failure modes were, and the fun thing about it was the technician, who was an old analog guy, used to love to write his reports where he said the microprocessor failed because he was against digital. So like every time he zapped the micro, it was like, there you go, I got another one of those blanking microprocessors. He's long since retired.
Or dead.
Or dead, right. But in those days, when you would zap a TV set with a static electric shock, the digital electronics would fail. Qualitative tests are not designed to yield life data that can be used in subsequent quantitative accelerated life data analysis. They do provide valuable information as to the types and levels of stresses and so forth. The benefits of these tests include increasing reliability by revealing probable failure modes, providing valuable feedback in designing quantitative tests, and in many cases, they're a precursor to a quantitative test. But the drawback is that what is the reliability of the product at normal use conditions? Mapping these accelerated tests to normal use conditions, there's quite a lot of science that goes into that. Quantitative tests, on the other hand, are designed to quantify the life characteristics of the product, component, or system under normal use conditions and thereby provide reliability information. Reliability information can include the determination of the probability of failure of the product under use conditions, the mean life under conditions, and projected returns and warranty costs. This is really why companies do this kind of quantitative testing, because as we talked about, you're going to adjust your warranty policies and such based on the expected lifetime of the product, or you will redesign it to meet a certain warranty if there's industry pressure to have a particular warranty. More often than not, as we mentioned earlier, warranties are set based on financial considerations. They have nothing to do, actually, with the design of the product. And it can also be used to assist in the performance of risk assessments, design comparisons. When you have catastrophic failures, those are usually the result of conditions that you didn't really test when you were doing your normal life testing and such. So we've had a number of natural disasters, or number of disasters recently, like the Gulf oil spill and such, where the failures have been things they didn't predict from their normal testing. And now you're seeing engineers having to go back and redesign these systems because the performance standards and the safety standards are going to change because of that. But there's quantitative accelerated life testing can take the form of usage rate acceleration or overstress acceleration. And there's kind of two ends of the spectrum on this. If you're building casings for a nuclear reactor, what kind of failure are you trying to deal with? What kind of failure rates are you trying to deal with? One in a million kinds of situations. So how do you develop a statistical model for something that's one in a million? Or one in a billion? What's your tendency, what's your approach going to tend to be as an engineer? This nuclear reactor that's melting down in Japan, what were their two main lines of defense on that reactor? Maybe three main lines of defense.
It wasn't built for two catastrophes at once.
Right, but I mean, what, in terms of the design, how did they design that so that it would withstand most natural disasters? When 9/11 happened, people immediately asked, what happens if somebody tries to fly a 747 into the middle of a nuclear reactor? The answer was no. The answer was they probably would have done it if they could. What was the answer? The 747 would just kind of bounce off of it. Why? Has anybody followed the what's going on in Japan?
I have. I don't understand how the reactor can crack.
What you have this reactor, and I don't know all the details of this, but you got some really ugly, hot, radioactive stuff. What did they put around it? A containment chamber. How did they design that containment chamber? So do you know what the... I don't know a lot about this, but I just know the basics. How thick was it? What was it made out of? That's the second one. Let's get to the first. We'll get to the concrete.
I think it's
like a foot. I think it was either 10 inches or 8 inches or a foot of solid stainless steel. Do you know how much that costs? You know how much that weighs? Do you know how much they wish that was 2 feet of stainless steel? If it was 2 feet of stainless steel, this probably wouldn't have happened. They think that the stainless steel compartment was actually breached on a few of the reactors, meaning that it cracked in some way and was leaking. What was the second containment device? It was a steel-reinforced concrete building. when the reactor blew, all that heat built up. There's actually a third, you could say, the cooling system. They designed the cooling system to operate under some pretty extreme conditions. So what you essentially do in these one-in-a-million type things is you end up, in a sense, over-engineering. And you can sort of afford that on those kinds of projects because they're expensive projects. They're not really cost constrained. However, at the other end, when you're designing a cell phone that everyone's going to use, you're talking about failure rates on the order of what?
One in 1,000,
one in 10,000, one in 100,000, much higher failure rates. So you're not going to over-engineer. Why? Cost, because that's a very cost-constrained market. Every penny you spend on over-engineering is a penny out of your profits. So you're going to do these kinds of accelerated life tests on high-volume things like consumer electronics because you have to be very accurate in your assessments about costs. Now, what is one approach that some of the companies take in these low-cost consumer products? The companies that try to sell at a much less lower cost than what Motorola sells at. Why do you think when you get these free phones, they often come from companies you've never heard of? Okay, and what's their strategy? What are those companies' strategy? They're selling you something that's inexpensive and very likely to break. And they also set their operating points so that they will maximize profit. And if that means the failure rate is higher than normal, they've figured out that economically they can afford that. So there's designing for these two different extremes requires quite different design strategy. Now, how do we actually bring some mathematics to this? Well, we're going to have to use statistics, and I won't go beyond this in terms of the statistics today, but what you have is essentially a parameter estimation problem. So what this curve tries to show is a reasonable model of the life expectancy of a device or a system. And generally speaking, what would we expect about the life expectancy of a system? If I took 1 million cell phones off of that production line you saw from Motorola and I turned them all on and just kept them on until they died, what kind of a distribution of failure rates would I expect to see? No. Gaussian's a good guess, but unfortunately, why is Gaussian not... Well, actually, Gaussian's not a bad guess, except what's wrong with Gaussian? Gaussian is symmetric about the mean, right? And this is really a one-sided distribution.
It's going to be skewed,
right. And there's actually several mathematical models of such distributions. Weibull is one of them that's used. And they all tend to look sort of like this. They often will decay exponentially. Sometimes they may rise and then decay exponentially. Sometimes they might just be a pure exponential decay. But we know, statistically speaking, that the life expectancy of this device is probably going to be some kind of exponential model, not some kind of linear model.
Sudhi? What are the two axes?
Well, I'll get to that. Okay, so time, we've established exponential decay as a function of time. What else is going to influence the lifetime of this product, however?
Use.
And how would we characterize use in a sort of a general term?
Stress.
So this other dimension you'll often see in these plots is stress. And stress can be at many things. It's just sort of a notational term to describe something about usage. And from what you've observed about users, what do you generally expect in terms of failure rates due to stress? And what do you expect about your user populations in terms of stress? What would be a good statistical model of your users or the behavior of your device in terms of stress?
As in two drops in a month?
As what?
Dropping the device twice.
No, but in terms of how do you think the failure rate is going to vary as a function of stress? Is it going to be linear? Is it going to be uniform?
Gaussian.
Skewed Gaussian, right?
Well, it looks Gaussian from here.
No, it's not Gaussian. It's the same. Essentially, the model's also going to be exponential. It'll be a one-sided type distribution.
I'll look at this axis, the stress axis.
What?
I'm looking at that fold in the very right hand side.
Yeah, because there is actually a... There's a certain amount of there's kind of a mean value of stress for which this, that you should get your highest you should get reliable. The failures are going to peak around a certain amount of stress.
Right.
It's not pure exponential. Like I said, these kinds of distributions will often have a slow attack and then like an exponential decay. But there generally is some kind of mean around which you're going to see most of your failures, and that relates to actually how you design the product. Anything earlier than that mean is going to be due to anomalies like bad components or those kinds of things. Anything beyond that mean is going to be also that kind of statistical thing. So what are some of the things that influence these kinds of failures? So in the Motorola video, you know, we saw a few things. Button presses. You put your cell phone in front of a robot that presses a button 24 hours a day. What's going to cause this variation in performance? Why won't all of those buttons fail exactly at the 1,157th depression? What are some of the things that are going to influence the lifetime of that button? Where our mechanical engineers should be able to speak to this. So you buy 1,000. I know these are capacitive, I guess, but you buy 1,000 springs from a manufacturer. There's going to be a statistical variation in the quality of those springs. You build 1,000 integrated circuits, capacitive, touch-sensitive keys. There's still going to be statistical variation of the capacitance properties of those keys. You buy a resistor, you know, you buy 1,000,000 resistors. Well, when those were manufactured, there was some guy probably drinking coffee when one of the things ran out of chemicals.
Oh, well.
And, you know, yeah, and is he going to go and tell his boss, you know, we just shot 1,000,000 resistors? No, he'll just, you know, fill the thing up. Yeah, and go and hope that nobody finds that. I mean, you laugh about these things, but this is literally true. And I was over at the med school last week, and I went into the big auditorium in the med school and noticed that they have this beautiful auditorium with cement stairs, and they painted the cement stairs. They painted the aisles where the seats are, and on almost every one of the aisles there were patches of paint that had peeled, separated from the concrete. And someone asked me, since I'm the concrete expert, you know, what happened? And I mean, you look at this and it's, you know, like every 4 or 5 feet there's concrete, there's paint peeling. And my guess is they maybe painted when that concrete was too moist, or there was some kind of moisture that got between the paint and the concrete when that paint was put down. Probably they painted too quickly after the concrete was set or something. I don't know, but it was really amazing to see that. These kinds of failures are, you can't eliminate them. You do try to do quality controls. We talked about a few classes ago. But you're always going to be dealing with these kinds of distribution of failures. So how do we actually make accelerated life testing match actual use? That's the last point for today. Now we get to see the difference between the engineers and the technicians in the room, and the ones who actually understand a little bit of math. The question is, we have now, over the last 20 years, collected data on the cell phone we made 20 years ago. And I have actual life test data on that cell phone. I can plot, we made 1 million of them, I've tracked every one of them, I can plot an actual histogram of when they died. What will the shape of that distribution be? Don't say Gaussian. What will the shape of that distribution be? We just talked about this. It's going to be some kind of exponential decay. What? Okay. You didn't say it loud enough. How many... If we wanted to fit an exponential distribution to that data, how many parameters do you think it's going to take to fit that distribution to the actual data? One. Generally, with an exponential, you just have the constant that controls the decay. If I gave you the data and I gave you that mathematical function, how would you do this fit? And someone better answer this, or you're going to get this as a homework problem. What? No, how would you actually do the fit? I give you the data, I tell you here's the function, I point out that you've now had 6 or 7 math classes and, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of education.
Exponential regression.
And how would you do that?
Use a software tool called MATLAB.
Thank you, thank you. All you had to do was say use MATLAB and I would have been happy.
Sometimes we get trouble for saying that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Who?
Szilagyi?
Okay, I won't tell Dr. Szilagyi that you think he's a really terrible teacher. All right, so you can do a parametric fit of the data, right? And this is actually what you do when you want to analyze things. Now, the problem is we're going to try to conduct this test over a much compressed time scale, because we can't wait 20 years for this data. So what are we going to do? What? So we're going to try to run a test over a compressed amount of time. So if, for example, we're worried about vibration, as you saw in the video, we will put the phones in the vibration chamber and run that maybe 24 hours a day for a week. And we'll do that on enough phones that we can get a statistically significant estimate. So we might do, let's say, 100 phones. Do the test, measure the reliability, and now we can plot a similar curve of the failure rate of the phones as a function of that shortened test.
Quick question. When they do the accelerated life testing, do they take into account the cumulative effect of the use that's been in the past?
Well, that's what I'm saying, accelerated, right? So if, for example, let's go back to our washing machine case. How many times a day do you use a washing machine typically? And
probably once a week.
I know the answer to that depends on a few what we call demographic factors here. You think that's a good answer? How do you know who's going to buy this appliance? Wait. Listen, this is a very good point. The engineer, my lead engineer here, says it depends on whether this is being bought by a family or a single person.
No,
or a laundromat.
You do an average, period.
Okay, well, what kind of machines do they use in a laundromat? Getting back to the comment over here at the beginning of class. They use commercial grade machines. Okay, but we're talking consumer. But so how are you going to deal with this? Whether it's a family of 4 or 8 or whatever, using this thing every day?
Look
Well, this is, again, this is what goes into your design rules. You're going to have to develop some sense of what your target use is and what the impact of that's going to be on product reliability. And that's going to influence the accelerated life test. But let's assume you sort of figure that out. So we're going to run this test over a week, and that's designed to simulate. We used to, in the television lab I was in, we used to run some of the TV sets for about a week, a month, and 3 months. 3 months was what was called extended life test. And we had data on for all three data points. And the key was, now that we had that data over the short time period, we had a mathematical mapping of that data to the actual use. So we could essentially take the parameters that we learned from those models and map them to the distributions that represented the longer-term use. And this is, again, another statistical parameter estimation problem that if you, for example, go to grad school, you'll have a chance to learn about some of this. So you do the short test, and then you have some mathematics which lets you map that into the actual statistics of real use. And that mapping is what companies consider somewhat proprietary, because companies try to refine these models to increase their profit. So if you take a company that's really quality conscious, like Toyota, they will probably tell you for each and every component that they use what its impact has been on life tests based on all their accumulated years of experience. And for many years, you could tell the difference between Japanese cars and American cars because Japanese cars were generally built very reliably. They paid attention to each and every detail to get the overall lifetimes up. American manufacturers were much more in line with the idea that once the car got past this warranty period, it was your problem. And if it broke down, that was good because that generated more sales for them. So if you looked inside an engine, 20 years ago, American cars exposed wiring, unprotected connections and all this. Japanese cars, everything was sealed. American cars have since caught up. So that's just a little bit about this accelerated life testing, which is something all of you are going to face because many of you have claimed some of your design constraints related to reliability and lifetime and such. And you don't have a lot of time to do those tests, but at the very least, be aware of these things as you talk about your designs on your final presentations. Okay, any questions?
We meet Tuesday?
We meet Tuesday, right?
When do we get the schedule?
I'll get those out this week.